Hello and welcome to your weekly roundup of all the latest news and ramble about the world of electric cars from the team at electrifying.com. This week, we are chatting about the Dacia Spring, otherwise known as the UK's cheapest new electric car, the faster Volkswagens that definitely are not GTIs, and yet another Chinese brand with plans for the UK. And of course, we will be answering your electric car questions and dipping into the postbag to find out your views on everything electric. Welcome to the Kilowatt Half Hour. I'm Ginny.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Mike.
Oh, and you were on your own last week, weren't you?
I didn't have
any of the girls with you.
We coped, didn't we, Mike? We bumbled through.
We did. Yeah, we managed just about.
Your podcast did frustratingly brilliant numbers. So maybe our listeners are trying to tell us something, because it was a fantastic episode. And I think it has had our record numbers of downloads and listens to date. Now, don't be smug. Come on, don't be smug.
It's because I said at the beginning it would probably be the least successful. So it's quite amusing.
No, it did. So yeah, I can't even remember why I wasn't there. I have no idea where I am. It's been a whirlwind recently, and I was actually in Paris this week, looking at a car that I once again can't talk about just yet. But I was chatting to a colleague of ours from another publication, the lovely Jordan from Auto Express, and we were both saying that we've never known a period with so much and so many launches and new cars happening. I don't know about you two. It's busy, isn't it? Really busy at the minute.
It is. It comes in fits and starts, doesn't it? I've got this theory that this is the kind of the ghost of the Geneva Motor Show, because people used to launch stuff at Geneva Motor Show. And even if they're not there, they've still got like a 3 or 6 year cycle on those cars, and they just naturally occur now. I think that's my theory anyway.
It's a good theory. So what have you both been driving this week? What have you been in?
Well, I've been having some fun, I must admit.
Go on.
I'm very jealous.
I went down to Goodwood, where they have a media day, and it's kind of a taster before the Festival of Speed. And there were lots of cars there that were nice. I went down there to drive something called a Yangwang U8, which, as regular readers and listeners will know, is a completely barking mad off-roader 4x4, sort of £150,000 worth. But I looked at the list of the other cars there and went, ooh, some quite nice stuff here. But the Yangwang first, it is a big 4x4. It looks like a Land Rover Defender. Interior is more luxurious than a Range Rover. And it has four motors, one for each wheel. And each motor is more powerful than you'd get in the new ID5 GTX. So it's like 300 horsepower per wheel. I mean, it's nuts. No.
That's insane. So are they selling this already in China?
Yeah.
So this is a car that you can buy in China.
I just assumed that this is all concept car and it's all pie in the sky. They're not actually going to make it. They said, no, we sold 1,500 in China and it's sold out for the next 2 years or something. And I'm like, oh my God. So it's 1,200 horsepower in a car that weighs 3.4 tons. Wow. If you put us three in the car, you'd need a special license to be able to drive it. It'd be overweight. It'd be technically a commercial vehicle. And you can imagine what this is like. I mean, it's absolutely insane. So it does 1,200 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 3.6 seconds, I think. So if you can imagine that in something that big and that heavy. It's also amphibious, so you can drive it in water, but only for half an hour. So it's for emergency use, because then you have to have it checked by a dealer. So if you get caught in a flood or something, you won't die, and it will puddle along, you know. But I drove it.
If you want to, if listeners do want to see that car, if you haven't already, if you go over to Electrifying.com on Twitter or X or whatever we call it, that place, there's a video on there that you took, and we're going to get a YouTube shot up as well, because it's nuts to see, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it does this tank turn, so the wheels are on one side go one way, on the other side they go the other way. So it twists around, which is insane as well. But, I mean, to drive it, I thought I had no idea what it's going to be like, and it's like nothing I've ever driven before, because you go into a corner, and bearing in mind this is on a circuit, and Goodwood as well, which is a fast circuit, and it's going, and it's trying, all the motors are trying to get you around the corner, and the tyres are just being tortured because of physics, you know, 3.5 tonnes. But the funniest part was like, oh, there's a Lamborghini behind you. You need to, like, indicate to the right and move over to the right. So you do that, you move over to the right, Lamborghini goes past you on the bend, and then there's a straight and you plant the throttle and you catch the Lamborghini again, and they're looking in their mirror going, what? There's something like a Defender bearing down on me. It's absolutely crazy. I'm not sure the world needs it.
Did you ask the question why? Why they felt the need to design and develop a vehicle that can perform tank turns? I mean, it's an amazing party trick and it looks great when you see it. Why it needs to float on water half an hour? Is there a why, or is it just because it can?
I think it's just because it can. Apparently the big boss bloke is an engineer and he likes to do these things that look impressive and capture the attention of the world, which it's done. So there's Land Rover, there's Mercedes, all with G-Wagons and Defenders, not doing them electric. And he's come along and gone, look, I can do this. And we're all talking about it. So it's quite clever.
We'll talk about it indeed. But let's just stay with Goodwood for a moment, shall we? Because news has reached me that we have a car thief on the podcast in our midst. Somebody, Tom, went off in a Rolls-Royce Spectre and perhaps didn't bring it back quite as quickly as the nice people from the Rolls-Royce PR team would have liked. So they kind of thought that you liked it so much you decided to keep it. And then when I spoke to you about it at the end of the day yesterday, you were like, but yeah, well, I did really like it and I really want one now. And that's not the way to go about it. If you want one, you have to try and save up your pennies and buy one, and you can't steal them, okay?
Yes, I understand. Okay. So they said,
it's a good car though, isn't it? It's a steal-worthy car. I'm glad you've had the chance to drive that, because I loved it. I drove it on the launch last year and I honestly don't know why you would go back to a Rolls-Royce with an internal combustion engine, because doesn't it suit electric?
It does so much. I was asking them about do these people fast, the owners, do they fast charge it? Are they bothered about that? They said, no, they charge it at home. They have on average six other cars. And each Rolls-Royce Spectre does an average of 6,000 kilometres a year. So what's that, sort of 5,000 miles, I suppose, isn't it? And they'll just charge it home from their solar panels, which also, you know, warm their pool or something, I assume. and they swan around. But it's quite a thing. I did feel...
It's extraordinary. And you probably didn't see it at night. Well, you can see full advantage of that, the Starlight headliner, which is just all those little tiny, tiny, tiny LEDs that are in individual perforations. And it's quite beautiful, isn't it, the whole thing? And incredibly comfy, as you'd expect a Rolls-Royce to be.
Yeah. I mean, the option, like that headliner, for example, you can have it in the same star pattern that was visible from when your child was born or something.
I know. I know. It's nuts, isn't it? The day that you propose to your partner, you could buy them the car and choose the constellation pattern from that night. It's gorgeous. And I think the nearest we will get to owning one, Tom, is stealing one.
Yeah. Well, I got lost. That was my excuse. I got a little bit lost.
Yeah. Sorry. Let's move on now. Sorry, Tom. We're not having that. Mike, have you stolen anything this week?
Oh no, I think I'm the only one on this podcast keeping it real. I'm the only one of the not Rolls-Royce driving presenters. But I had a Megane, E-Tech, it was one, which I went back on Monday. So that was nice. I hadn't really driven any proper miles in that. And we did the podcast last week and then just sort of picked it up and driven it here. So I was really, really impressed. We had a bit of a charging nightmare, in so much as I think the charger that we plugged it into where we were filming slightly spooked it. And it meant that we couldn't get any charge into it, even on the granny charger. So we were a bit worried for a bit. But we did the old, you know, good old-fashioned switch everything off, switch everything back on again. And I went for a little drive and came back and everything was fine. And never missed a beat since. But it's a really nice car. I mean, I forgot. You and I drove that in left-hand drive form a long time ago, didn't we? Mm. When we had it for a few hours, I think, very early on. And didn't really get a good go at it. Yeah, it's good. You've driven as well, Jen, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got a triple test coming soon to the site, to YouTube and the website. Sorry, what am I talking about today?
Everywhere.
To our YouTube channel, everywhere. It'll be all over the place. A triple test involving that car, and that'll be dropping pretty soon. And yeah, it'll be interesting. I think you will find the result of that one quite interesting. Should we stay with French cars though for a bit? And should we talk about the Dacia?
The story, yes, absolutely.
Dacia Spring. So I came back from a bit of time in that car when we did the first look video, and I was saying it's going to be 15. And I think you were like, really, it can't be. Let's just put 15 and a half. I was like, I think it's going to be 15. Yeah. It was actually, it starts with a 14,995 for the Spring. It has been confirmed this week. And that set our socials alight with lots of comments. And I think the biggest, you know, people are saying stuff like, you know, it's not good enough range. And is it is it actually going to be practical? But actually, Mike, you and I were chatting and we were talking about the numbers of people in the UK that have second cars as well. There are 2 million households in the UK that have a second car. When you consider that on average as well, the average journey times distances in the UK are 20 miles a day we drive in our cars. The Dacia Spring with its, you know, it's going to be what, 120 miles? It's the official range is 132, I think. So, you know, it'll be in winter, you'll be getting sub 100, you know, at least, at the most rather. But I think for so many people, that will actually be enough. This is a car that you will top up often. You will plug it in at night. You'll, you know, if you've got a charger nearby, you'll just be topping it up often. And I think for so many people, that will allow them to get into electric driving, which is a brilliant thing. I don't know. What do you guys think of the pricing? Do you think it? I think it's about right for what it is.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's a surprise and a pleasant surprise that it starts with the 14. Yeah. But my question, as always, because I look on our marketplace for the used car prices, etc., would you have that or would you have a delivery mileage pre-registered Fiat 500 at 14,800?
And it is that. But there is still for a lot of people that want a new car and want to, you know, and also want to buy it on finance on monthlies as well. So, you know, it's still an option for so many people.
Yeah, I think I was looking at all the comments coming through and they were great. And they kind of basically fell into two camps, really. There were people saying, this is great. Dacia aren't going to be able to make those fast enough because they're going to be a huge, huge seller. To other people saying, I'm not entirely sure who this is for. It wouldn't work for me and it wouldn't work for my parents. It wouldn't work for anyone else that I know. But it's tricky, isn't it? And you would always say, well, it's, and a lot of people said, well, it's 14 grand. If it only had a bigger battery and faster charging, well, you know, I kind of wish this job had twice the pay and half the hours, but that's not going to happen either. So it is what it is. And I think you're right. There's a lot of cachet involved with buying a new car. It is, it's a treat. I've done it once and I it was the most amazing experience because your name is the first one on the V5 and it's
great, isn't it?
It's like the day you get the mortgage for your house or something, you know, whatever. It's a lovely thing. And to make it, and it'd be interesting what the monthlies are because, as Tom says, there's a lot of brands who are, let's be honest, they're struggling to shift the volume of cars that perhaps they anticipated. So where you've got what used to be the Funky Cat, now called the very memorable 03. I mean, that's 100-something quid a month, isn't it, Tom, on a PCP?
Really cheap.
So you kind of hope that Dacia can kind of get competitive with that because if they're kind of 250, 300 a month, then it's a no-brainer, isn't it? But there's still a few kind of hurdles to go, but it's hugely encouraging that we've got a car that cheap.
Hugely encouraging. And actually the quality was definitely, you know, up on that car when I went to see it. You can see that it's a real step up from that previous model, which it needed to be.
Yeah.
And I think what this has sort of got me thinking is how well the French and Renault in particular, Renault Group, are doing at the moment with electric cars. They're just absolutely knocking it out of the park, aren't they? So as you said, we had the Mégane, impressed us all. You know, we've really liked that car. Nicola has just been off to drive the Scenic. So that's, you know, made a return. That was one of the first cars I reviewed. And there's loads of videos of me on YouTube with old variations of Scenics. And I actually remember interviewing with a fringe and shoulder pants, interviewing Patrick Le Quemon, who, I don't know if you remember him, who was the Renault designer who first penned it, and talking to him about it. And I think that's on there as well somewhere. So I've got a soft spot for that car. And Nicola came back and has been absolutely raving about it. So the video's here on YouTube if you haven't checked it out already. Make sure you do, and there's a full review over at electrifying.com. And it makes you wonder about the Peugeot e3008, which is, according to Nick, she just thinks it, you know, nice car, drives really nicely, and massively undercuts it on price as well. So, but they're doing that. They've said the Megane's great. And then we've got the Renault 5, which is, you know, that brilliant reinvention of a car that we love. They are doing some really interesting, extraordinary stuff, aren't they, Renault, at the moment?
And you've got the Renault 4 coming up as well, and the Citroën EC3 as well. I mean, they're all going to be coming this year, aren't they? I think the 4 will probably be towards the end of the year if it's going to come this year. But the pipeline for French electric cars is astonishing, isn't it? They've really ramped everything up.
Well, what I was going to say, the Dacia Spring, I think, and to a certain extent the Renault 5 and that Citroën, they're going to be great station cars. So if you've got a family car and you don't want to take it to the station and you don't know if you can fit it in that parking spot, you just imagine that's the car you take to the station every day. Well, that's the car you take to work every day. That's fine. And then you've got a big family car for the rest of the time. That's its kind of sweet spot, I think. And that's where it's going to be. There will be station car parks full of Springs and Citroën EC3s.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have loads of older people living in our village who have relatively small cars now, and all they're ever doing is run around to the shops, or, you know, they're retired. Actually, something like the Spring again for that is going to be absolutely ideal for that, because it is finally we're getting somewhere with price. But yeah, I think vive la revolution when it comes to French cars at the moment, particularly electric ones, and particularly Renault, who also are designing cars that look really nice as well, with some really nice features in them. Their design team is doing some fantastic stuff. So,
yeah. All good.
So have we decided who's going to drive the Renault 5 when it comes out?
Well, I think we know who's going to drive that. It's going to be you, isn't it, Jenny?
You'll
say something about...
I don't know.
It's the algorithm. Yeah.
The algorithm, because I didn't know them. I feel like we should ask if we can take a group of us. Like, could we have a road trip and all go along to do it?
We've got this idea for a feature and we need 3 different colours. So can we have 3 of them?
Yes.
Yes, we've got to try and find that. I literally can't wait. But also the Spring, also really want to drive that. Anyway, so yeah, that's the cars that caught my eye this week. I've been in an EX30, actually. I've been driving that quite a bit. And I don't think I know that you two potentially aren't fans necessarily of the infotainment, everything being in that central screen. I've actually got along with that okay. I've had a few charging niggles, though, which has bothered me a bit more than that. And also it does need the CarPlay, doesn't it? The CarPlay over the air updates coming in the summer.
Have customers got them now? Is there going to be anybody out there as a listener who can tell us if they've taken them?
Customers have them. There is one that I drive past quite regularly in that amazing yellow colour, and it looks lovely, and it's parked outside somebody's house not far from me in Oxfordshire. So I presume there are customers who have got them.
Well, if there's anyone out there who's got one, let us know what you think of it, because I think the ones we've had, which are obviously the very early cars that are their demonstrators, have had a couple of niggles. So I don't know if those have made it to the customer cars too. I'd be interested to know.
Yeah, please do. And as always, do let us know if you have any questions or comments. If you're listening on your usual podcast streaming service, you can email us info@electrifying.com. And if you're here on YouTube, just stick it in the comments below. Or you can email us as well if you want to do. But we do read the comments. Well, Mike does anyway, postman Mike, and we'll be having his postbag a little later. But Mike, what's caught your eye in the news world this week?
Well, this week we've had Volkswagen unveil the GTI that isn't the GTI, because as we know, Volkswagen like to keep their sporting brands.
What's that all about?
I know, I don't know. But I mean, I would have said before that they like to keep their sporting brands separate, and so much as GTX is always going to be the sporty electric ones. But you, last year, you went to go and see the ID2 GTI, so that kind of puts that theory... I mean, to be fair to Volkswagen, they are in the process of kind of welding together the electric car and the internal combustion engine car. So there won't be this kind of ID separation that we've had before. But this week we've seen the ID3 GTX and we've seen the ID7 GTX. Now, both of these have got the new drive, APP 550, the boring name, is the new drive system that is across the entire Volkswagen group. So 545 Newton meters of torque. And in the power for the ID3 GTX, you've got 322 brake horsepower rear-wheel drive. So it's the kind of Volkswagen version of the Cupra VZ that Tom mentioned the other week. So that's a lot of power. That's going to be quite punchy. They're very subtle in terms of looks. They don't really look that much different to the normal ID3 and normal ID7. But the wagon, the ID7 Tourer, sounds quite nice. You know, I think that's certainly had the most interest on Twitter or X, or whatever. In terms of sort of feedback, I think people really like the idea of a fast wagon, don't they? That's certainly caught my eye, definitely.
Yeah, but I do think they're really confusing people. Because you ask most people what they think a GTX is, and you're not thinking sporty Volkswagen, are you? You're really not.
No, you and I are an era where GTX means Castrol GTX.
Yes, it does mean Castrol GTX. That's exactly what it means to me, which is completely the wrong thing for them and not what they want people to be thinking about. And I think it will be much easier for them, and I think it's the right decision, because the ID names will go down the line, won't they? And eventually it will just be, you know, those familiar marks that we know. And I think that's why I think Renault have been so good with the Renault 5. You know, it's a car that everybody loves. They've reinvented it as electric. Yes, it's probably been easier for them because it is only electric. But Mini have managed to do it. Mini have somehow managed to bridge that gap between building combustion engine versions and electric, and it's not gone a bit sort of bit weird and confusing. And, you know, I don't know. I think it will be easier for them, I think, when the ID brand goes. I think we all agree that it's not been a massive success for them, has it, in terms of brand recognition.
I always thought that the GTX would refer to four-wheel drive performance cars.
I think that was the original plan.
And then this ID3's got two-wheel drive, so that should have been a GTI. I'm confused.
I think there was talk originally, wasn't there, 2019, that Volkswagen said, well, you know, that smaller version of the platform can be made into all-wheel drive, because it's basically most of the chunks of the ID4 and ID5, isn't it? But I think there was a cost implication. I think it was made as rear-wheel drive, but could potentially be. So obviously they've looked at the sums and thought, well, it ain't going to work. And there's no point giving the small one a different badge to the other ones. Let's just try and sort of forget that X is all-wheel drive and go with that. So I mean, it'll only bother nerds like us, I suspect.
Anything else we want to slip in before we head to the post bag and the car buying conundrums?
Rivian have shown Rivian seem to have invented the Mark 1 Golf GTI. the R3 and the R2, which are supposedly the smaller, more European friendly versions of Rivian's great big car. So if you have a look on the site, see what you think of that. But it is very much the side profile of the R3. Does it like a Mark 1 Golf?
It does. I think it looks brilliant. I absolutely love it. I really, really think it looks fantastic. And I do. I just hope that we finally get to see their cars here in the UK. I'm sort of sick of saying, it sounds like they're in talks with the government to potentially build a factory here. Oh, no, it's definitely, that's not happening now, but they are going to come next year. I mean, I just hope they get some cars over here, because I really love their cars. I think they look brilliant. And I think the R3 does look fantastic.
Yeah. Does look good, doesn't it? So, I'm interested to see what listeners think. Have you had a look at it on the site and see... is that the kind of thing that would work for you? And it's a strange one, isn't it? Because you look at the size of that, you think, oh, that's quite nice, a little small car. And you look at the dimensions. It's enormous. It's the size of an ENIAC when you actually look at the dimensions of it. But it looks quite sort of small and compact in the pictures.
It does look compact. I just think it looks great. And I do, you know, like we kind of were all a bit sniffy about the whole build your dreams, the BYD thing across the back. Yeah. I think sometimes logos do look great. And the way they've got just Rivian, you know, it's just stretched across the back under that fantastic rear light bar that just goes across the rear of the car. Yeah. I think it looks great. I really do. I'm hoping to try and get to see it. I'm desperately, I'm in New York the week after next for World Car of the Year announcements. And I'm desperately like in contact with the Rivian PR team. So Rivian PR team, if you're listening, yes, you really do want to get a car for me to have a look at in New York. I'm begging them. So it'd be nice to actually see it and see if it looks as cool as it does in the pictures.
Yeah, be good.
It is. So should we do post bag? How's the post bag looking this week, Mike? Have we had lots of fabulous comments and questions?
Amazing. I can't thank you all enough for listening and putting your comments in, whether you like stuff, don't like stuff, whether you've got car buying queries or stories that you've done. Please continue, because they obviously make our week when you read those. They're really good. I've got two car buying conundrums for you this week, Gina. I've got one easy one and one slightly trickier one. I'm going to start with the easy one.
I'll take the easy one.
Well, yeah, you'll see why I'll direct the easy one to you. As Nev Brownlee says, I suspect this will be the dullest question you've ever been asked at Electrify. The bar's pretty low for that. So, I love Ginny's video on the Renault 5, but I'd like to know if there are any door pockets in the rear. I ask because I like the look of both the Renault 5 and the Fiat 600e, but disappointing the Fiat has nothing at all for rear passengers except the map pocket. Do you know if it has door pockets, the Renault 5? We hand over now to our Renault 5 correspondent, Ginny Buckley.
I'm afraid to report that it doesn't have, it just has the rear pockets on the back of the seats. But please don't let that put you off, because you could just shove your bottle in that. It would absolutely fit, because it is such a fabulous car. Obviously, we say that with the caveat of having not driven it yet. But in terms of just the package and just what it looks like and all the thought they've put into it, I think it is a lot of car for the money. So I'm sure that if we go onto Amazon, we can find you some kind of clip that will clip onto the back of that pocket that you could put your water bottle in.
Could the baguette hold a wall?
I will come... Is what, Tom?
Could the baguette holder work? Could you have one of those on the back and then put a bottle of Evian in it or something?
Absolutely. There will be. For the next podcast, I'm going to try and find a solution for that, because I feel so strongly that I don't want the lack of of somewhere to put his water bottle be a blocker for the love that he may have for the Renault 5, because it's such a nice car.
You know what?
Okay, leave that one with me. I will report back. That's it. Handing over to the studio, this is Ginny Buckley, live from the Renault 5 event.
There we go. We'll have to get Nev on this group test with us. He'll have to come out with us as well with his little bottle of water to make sure he's happy with it. So the second one, right, this is trickier. Pete Hollyhead, right. Currently got a Kia Sorento 2.2D, which is a big old bus, to tow over a caravan of 1,613. This precise number is important, and I'll get onto that later. I'd like to go electric. I'm aware I'm not going to get a great range on it, but I'm looking for electric tow cars with capacities over or above 1,613. If he's trying to get it underneath, I don't really understand caravans terribly well, so forgive me for this. He's trying to get it under 1,600 kilos, so his market's a lot bigger. And if he can get it under that, he will get an EV6, which is his car of choice. But if he can't, what should he choose? He'll need a car that's kind of got a towing capacity up to 1,800 kilos, which is kind of the next one up, really. So he said the EV9 is too expensive. 60K is about his limit, because the EV9 Air is kind of on that price, but
it is.
You need the dual motor version to get the higher towing capacity.
Isn't that much? 2,500, isn't it? 2,500 kilograms.
For the all-wheel drive one, yes. Yes, exactly. But the other one...
What does the Air... Is the Air... I can't remember off how much
it's about 800, 900. It's way off. That's really not much at all.
It's such a shame, because it's a great car.
There are a few options, Pete. And I kind of ran some sums earlier today and sort of worked out which ones there would be. My personal choice would... I'd like the Volvo EX40 Recharge. It would feel quite... a little bit more compact, feel like a drawing room compared to your Sorento, which is enormous. I'd appreciate that. But that has a towing capacity of 1,800 if you go for the dual motor version. And that's 53,800 for the absolute top spec with all the whistles and bells in it. So you wouldn't be lacking for kit. But I suspect I might be the only one who really likes that car.
I just think it's ridiculously quick.
It won't be with a pilot.
Well, it won't be true. That's a very good point to make, actually. I think what both you and I, Tom, had slight issues. We didn't love the car. We didn't love the ride on it. And also, it's got such urgent acceleration. It just feels a bit disproportionate to the fact that this is actually just a nice sort of
family car.
Family car.
The new version where they put the engine at the back on for the two-wheel drive version. So I've driven that one and I thought that was a lot better. So I don't know, haven't driven the four-wheel drive one. Maybe it's not quite so crazy now. I thought it was much improved in that version. But also the inside was feeling a bit old maybe, and it's moving so fast, this market, isn't it? It's just, you see a screen that's that big and now it's like, oh, feels a bit old.
Yeah. Okay. What next? What's your other suggestions?
Tom's going to come up with the next suggestion because he put this in the hat and I thought it was a valid one.
Yeah, well, the Genesis GV70 electric. I know, really? I know. But I have actually towed with one. I towed a horse box on a test track and tried it out on sort of slippery conditions and things, and it worked really well. It towed beautifully. So I know you think the interior is a bit chintzy, but as a towing car, it was great.
I've just been out in Nicola's Genesis, her GV, GV 60. And I just don't love the inside. I feel like I need sunglasses or, you know, to kind of like put some covers over some of it because it's just so much going on in there. And look, maybe it is your thing. You really like loads of switches and buttons and I can't, you know, deny that it's luxurious and comfortable. I just don't massively love the interior personally. And that is where you're going to be sitting all the time. So I would perhaps think carefully about that one. That's my take on that. Sorry, go on next. Any other options?
Right. Well, okay then, little Miss Negative. What do you reckon? I've got the only one left on my list is an Audi Q8 e-tron. Now, don't jump at me because I know this is over budget to start with, but
okay.
Checked on it this morning. It's currently a 7,500 discount. Dealer contribution, they like to call it, don't they? But it's basically off the list price if you're putting it on a PCP. So that puts it around sort of 62 grand, which is probably just on the top of its haggling distance of your top budget. But would you go for that? Would that be your choice, Jenny?
I think it would be my choice out of those three, but it is a little bit more. And I know that at one point the EQA was potentially in the running, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I think we all agree that they're not, and Mercedes are not, it's not the best, is it really? It's all right, but I'm not sure with my hand on my heart, I could recommend the Mercedes EQA to anyone. I just don't think it's a good enough electric car. I think it's got some quite fundamental flaws. I think out of all those, if you can do some serious haggling, the Q8 is definitely the one that I would be going for.
Is it? Well, how long until the Q6 is out? That would probably be even better.
Yeah, that probably would be.
If you can wait.
Yes, that is a very good point.
Q6.
We can't talk about that car yet, but we will be able to talk about it in a week or so. Actually, hold the line, caller. We'll come back. We'll circle back on this one when we can talk to you about another Audi that might be coming that might actually be quite an interesting option for you.
Yeah. Well, don't go. That's not. I can talk about.
No,
that.
You can talk about that. Go on then.
And it was great. I mean, I just thought it had. It had the right sort of power that you need for that car. It seemed to be very efficient, had a big enough battery, and had lovely steering, which is a very geeky thing to say, but it was most un-Audi-like for that. I'd much rather have that than a Q8. And I think if you bought a Q8 and then you saw a Q6 or drove a Q6, you'd feel a bit silly. So wait for that.
Okay. And the maximum towing capacity on that's going to be somewhere between 2,000 to 2,500 kilograms.
Wow,
that'd be good.
Be good. So just hang fire for a while, and we might be able to talk about that fairly soon.
Come back soon, Pete. Okay, we'll give more advice. I'm just going to rattle through, if it's okay with you, a few little comments that we had from the postbag on the subject. Last week, we had the most bizarre shortlist for buying a car, Ginny. There's a chap whose name escapes me. Is the two cars he was with, it was an ex-dealer demonstrator SZ, come on, and a 2017 Tesla Model X, which were the same price. They were both about 24 grand. And we wondered if there was anyone out there that still had free supercharging. Remember, that was a thing when Model X and Model S came out. Not only are there a few people out there, there are two people who listened to the podcast who bothered to message us as well. So Neil Leet says, I've got a 2017 Model X with free supercharging still and a CCS upgrade. He's had it from new, best car he's owned. He can't bear to part with it because there's nothing else to good tempt him out of it. And the man with no name says, yes, I have. That's his name. I'm not disguising it. I have a 2017 Model S with free supercharging. I also have an adapter from Tesla to be allowed, so I'm able to use CCS, and another one for CHAdeMO. Oh, he's got the best of both worlds, hasn't he?
Yeah, brilliant.
So it's more charging is more flexible than others. So thank you both for mentioning that. I didn't realise there were so many people out there still had free supercharging. And on the subject of NCAP telling manufacturers to put buttons back into cars, Three comments on that. Pottery for Life said, I find it odd that some car manufacturers willfully add driving distraction by putting all the controls into an iPad or tablet. Fair enough. Neil Bassett also says, great episode, guys. So pleased buttons are coming back. Touching screens while driving is dangerous. Simple as that. But on the other side of the argument, Obi Paddles probably agrees with you, Ginny. Says, I disagree with all the comments about buttons. We have a Tesla and key things like wipers have stalks, now buttons. Because of the profiles, pretty much every setting is personalised to my requirements every time I get in the car. So horses for courses, isn't it? Buttons work for some
Do you know
people.
What? It's such a personal thing. It really is. Hmm. And, you know, it's just whatever it's down to the individual, you know, isn't it? I didn't personally like the fact that on the Model 3 now you don't have an indicator stalk, it's there's buttons. Other people, it doesn't bother. It bother them. It's you know, this is why it's wonderful, because we're all so different. We all have different opinions and we get to hear them all on the Kilowatt Half Hour. We do. And on that note, I think we have to wrap it up, because as always, it is the Kilowatt Half Hour and a little bit. But thanks again for all your questions, all your car buying conundrums. Please do keep them coming. And please, if you are listening on one of your streaming services, do like and follow us, because that really helps build the audience for this podcast, which is what we want to do, so we can keep on making it. And if you aren't already subscribed to our YouTube channel and you've just kind of stumbled across this podcast by accident, again, please do make sure that you subscribe to the channel and switch your notifications on. And on that note, I will say from me, Ginny, it is goodbye. See you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.